Well, good morning. I'm going to be talking a little about a survey I did on challenges of polyploid crop breeding that emerged from a planning grant that I put together a year ago or so. In January, we had the meeting and the planning meeting, and before that, I put a survey together to figure out where we were. Of course, polyploid genetics is a little more complicated than diploid genetics, and there's a lot of software out there for diploids, and there's quite a bit for polyploids, but it's sort of scattered. A lot of different people working on specific crops, not necessarily applicable to all crops, and so I wanted to sort of try to get everybody together and maybe put a whole nice set together and put everything together that we could sort of work on common issues and organize the existing tools, determine gaps in research needs, because there's a lot of different things going on, different groups, and they don't always communicate, test over multiple crops. So I wanted to do, I work with roses, which are diploid and tetraploid, and so I was encountering this issue of, well, I got to do these tetraploid genetics now. And so I wanted to get a little help, and this was my way to do it. Hopefully put it in a user-friendly format and develop the programs, educational programs and training, and develop a community resource for the polyploid community. So what I did, I did a survey of polyploid crops to figure out what we're dealing with, what problems, what issues. I wanted to characterize the crops we're dealing with, the major ones, and then look at what kind of general tools that they might be wanting to use. When I did this, I sent about 250 notes out to get input. I got 115 responses, about 100 unique individuals. Some had multiple crops. You can see about 70% male, 30% female, a range of mainly public programs. A lot of private programs responded, but very minimally, because they didn't want to give much of their information out. And then, of course, a range of ages, 30 to 60 being the major. So a lot of them are working and very active in the field, mainly from North America. There was scattering of other areas in 22 of the 48 states, continental states, that got responses from various breeding programs. If you look at it, mainly breeders. And, of course, a lot of breeders are also bioinformatics expertise in molecular genetics, so it doesn't always add up to 100 here. But you can see the majority are breeders. Some are allied scientists working with breeders, and I wanted their input, too, and a lot of different crop types. I put them into ornamentals, root and tuber crops, fruit and turf, and I won't go into the individual types of crops just because we don't have time in this venue. So if you look at the crop characteristics, just look in genome size. Ranges from rose being and blackberry being about 300, and then go up to lily, which is 36,000. A lot of them are between 500 to about 1,000, so you're in that range. Of course, you have sweet potato, chrysanthemum, 2,500, 3,000. So we got a range of things that we work with. Major ploidy levels used in breeding. Again, tetraploid tends to be the major ploidy level here. And then hexaploid, a few octoploids. There's some very important triploids as well. And, of course, diploids are used in the breeding as well because there's a lot of interploidy crosses. As you can see here, with respect to interploidy crosses used in breeding, quite a few crops are using interploidy crosses. So it gets complicated even more so because we're mixing ploidies. And so sometimes it's just really quite interesting, to say the least. But there's also, again, a range of different uses here. And if you look at the ploid levels of the commercial cultivars, we talked about the breeding, but commercial cultivars, again, tetraploid, major, hexaploid after that, quite a few triploids. And this is very important in the polyploid breeding community. We do a lot of triploid stuff. I mean, of course, banana, which is well known, rose, a lot of triploids. Bermuda grass, basically a lot of the varieties are triploids. And so we get a lot of different things going on here. You look at polyploid behavior, and I'm asking breeders here, how do your crop behave? And you can see that if you look at rose, it's listed as an allopolyploid, a segmental allopolyploid, and an autopolyploid. And I think it's an unknown as well. So breeders don't always know what they're dealing with. And, you know, sometimes it's not clear what we're dealing with. And different germplasm responds differently. So we do have a range of different polyploid situations going on here. If you look at the plant type, mainly perennials. Okay, so we're dealing with a lot of perennial polyploids, most of them vegetatively propagated. So, again, interploidy crosses, fine. Triploids are fine. We can propagate them. Not an issue. And so we have that. If you look at the reproductive barriers that they're reporting, and this is by crop, so this is the number of crops that are reporting any given problem. Inbreeding depressions, one of the major ones. Of course, clonally propagated, highly heterozygous type germplasm, well, that makes sense. You don't get a lot of inbreeding going on. Self-incompatibility, very common, interspecific intercompatibility, and you can go down the list. If you look at sexual reproduction, again, most of them are primarily outcrossing, or they do both, depending on the species. Okay, so you get a range, again, a lot of heterozygosity, different ploidy levels. There's some that are primarily selfing as well. You look at length of breeding cycle, again, this is a breeder responding, and how they interpret the question varies a little. So you get sweet or potato being a year or less for a breeding cycle, all the way to 9 years. And so it sort of depends how you look at it. If the breeder is saying, well, I need 8 years for selection before I use it again, well, that's a breeding cycle. So, but again, if you look at it, most of them are 1 to 4 years. Probably 2 to 4 years is probably the most common range on most breeding cycles here, but you do get a wide range. Looking at the breeding approaches of the polyploid crops, a lot of interspecific crossing. So again, highly heterozygous. A lot of different genomes coming in here. Recurrent mass selection, very common. Some back crossing, probably modified in a way that you're not using the same recurrent parent all the time because you're trying to avoid the inbreeding depression and the usual things. Now, if you look at gene editing, transformation, genomic selection, marker-assisted selection, those are the crops that are beginning to use those types of things. Sometimes it's experimental. There's a few that are more built into the breeding program, but most of it's experimental. Size of breeding programs are widely variable. The majority are less than 10,000 seedlings per year, but there are some that are over 100,000 on some of these crops. And so you get a wide range of sizes as well. The one thing I was concerned about when I look at the computational algorithms that are available, they're all dealing with biparental populations. Well, that's okay, but, you know, we use other populations on breeding program, and what I wanted to get the tools that we could use with the germplasm in the breeding program, not something strange that we did this weird cross to see what was going on, but be able to use it within the breeding program. So I asked all the breeders, saying, okay, what kind of population structures do you have in your breeding program? And you can see here what I had size of population, so if they don't make them, they just said they did not make it. And then the size of the populations they produce in those particular breeding population or breeding structures. You see up to 600 because one of the computational guys says, oh, I need 600 seedlings to do anything good. I said, okay, well, we'll start there. And you can see it's really biparental populations are very common, as you would expect. And then half-sib families are very common, too. And so we need to expand some of this software to deal with half-sib structures as well, or partial dialels. And then I asked about impediments to use of genomic tools, because that's a logical question. And, of course, the logical answer is, well, I don't have the analytical expertise or the software tools. Okay, well, that's good, because that's what we're hoping to put together. But the other thing that I thought was really interesting is the phenotyping tools was really important as well. And we've been talking for years, oh, we got these great genomic tools, but, oh, how do we phenotype these things? And how do we do it quickly so we can get a lot of information? So that was the other thing that came out here. We need a lot more work on the phenotyping aspect of a lot of these things. And then the current and future use. What do these breeders think what are they using now, and what do they hope to be using in the future that will help their breeding programs? And now this is basically how they're using molecular tools. Some don't use them. But you see, mainly for identification, diversity studies, linkage maps, and then quite a few using it for QTL and GWAS analysis. Once you get to parental selection or seedling selection with markers or genomic selection, much less. But how do they want to use it? In the future, they fully expect to be able to use genomic selection. They fully expect to use seedling selection, parental selection, markers to do all this stuff, and of course use a lot more for QTL analysis, GWAS analysis. So the expectation is that they'll be able to do this and to really make good progress. They'll hopefully accelerate their progress in their breeding programs. And so if you look at the summary, and I'll just go through this quickly. Of course, we looked at four groups of crops, including turf. Ploides, you get a wide range of ploides in genome size. Again, 4X and 6X are probably the primary ones. A wide range of ploidy characteristics. Interspecific interploidy crosses, very common, so you have high heterozygosity. Most are perennial and clonal. A lot of outcrossing, inbreeding depression, incompatibility, all that sort of stuff. Breeding cycles, 1 to 4 years, probably 2 to 4 years, probably most common. A lot of interspecific crosses used in breeding, which in a lot of other crops you don't see. Size of breeding program, 70% less than 10,000 seedlings per year, and quite a few less than 3,000. So a wide range, and we have to make these tools being adaptable to those types of crops as well. And then population structures, again, if we could do biparental as well as half-sib families, I think we'd be able to cover a lot of different situations and be able to use breeding germplasm and not just special germplasm for genetic studies. Impediments, again, software tools, phenotyping tools. A lot of them don't have genome sequences yet. And so this is an impediment on a lot of the genomic studies. Confidence, again, a high confidence that these tools will be useful. And so we need to put a lot more emphasis here in future use of markers for parental and seedling selection, genomic selection, and what have you. And so if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.